It looks as though I hit upon an attractive subject. We've had several snickers from various locations regarding it, but I think it is a very basic problem, and that is an effort to understand the compound nature of ignorance. Now, in order to understand it, I think we have to go back and see what is happening or has happened in the early ages of the earth. After the Lord said to all creatures, "Be fruitful and multiply," the next requirement was some kind of survival. Survival became the primary need of living things. Survival was hazarded by danger, and the dangers of that time were natural dangers, disasters. The primitive world fighting for survival. So in the beginning, all effort on the part of living things was to develop the pressure or impulse to survive. This was apparently created with them. For that which is fashioned is expected to endure at least for a time. So survival was the primary problem of the human being and of all natural creatures around him on the earth. Survival required something. Complete ignorance was not capable of survival. And yet there was no clear demarcation between ignorance and anything else. And so far as we can understand in those days, ignorance ruled the world, because there was really no situation permitting the individual to develop an orderly sequence of rules or obligations or governments. The survival principle, however, was very strong and has always been strong and is still to this time. So survival began to involve something else. It involved some kind of source of information. The creature was not born with a fully developed mentality capable of reading, writing, and arithmetic. The creature was born in a kind of a state of bewilderment. But as bad as things were, he hoped to stay here for a while. Therefore, the problem of trying to find out what hurt the least, what accomplished the most, and how to expend life most usefully in some way, all these were primary objectives. And in these objectives, the only possible source of information or instructions were experience arising from observation and personal contact. Experience must do some good. And primitive man, in desperate need of everything, began to be interested in experience. He began to observe that certain things he did got him into further trouble. Other experiences indicated that on right occasion he did something right, and this sort of eased things a little bit. And so the problem of experience also included watching the experiences of others. He watched the various prehistoric animals. He watched the various semi-domesticated ones. And he watched also the actions of others of his own kind. And he began to realize that these others of his own kind shared his dilemma, but also through common observation, rules of survival could gradually be created. So survival was the result of watching other things live and die, watching the various processes and procedures by which the common obvious dangers of life could be averted or reduced. This, therefore, was the beginning of education. Education was the gradual accumulating of knowledge of things practical and useful. In old days, there were no colleges, universities, or anything of this kind, but there were the elders. And those who had experienced the most were recognized as the guardians of those who had experienced less. And all the lives coming into this world were given certain help and information by the elders, the old ones, the truths, those who had experienced, those who knew, those who had watched, observed, and contemplated. Now, all of this would be very rudimentary in terms of our present thinking, but it was possible for the olds to more or less clarify some of the doubts of that time, to make things a little easier for those who were still in swamp and jungle. The olds could tell a little bit more about the nature of survival. They were the ones who had walked in strange places. They knew what was beyond the hills. They knew what was on the other side of the river. And this constituted higher education. And this education gradually went on until it resulted in a moderate state of security. It wasn't a severe and complete security. It wasn't anything that you might say made life as we know it now, but it did extend the probabilities of survival. And it did help the individual to realize that he could know more than he did. Now, of course, ignorance may be just simply based on the concept of ignorance. The individual who's seeing things happening around him observed nothing and profited nothing. The person who watched others suffer and did the same thing that caused them to suffer were in this difficulty because they had ignored experience or had failed to observe. So ignorance was the failure to observe, the failure to share in common knowledge, and the failure to recognize the processes of universal law. So survival began gradually to impose upon creatures the fact that there were rules to the game. That no matter how you began or why you went, there were laws governing everything. Now, mistakes were consistently similar. When things were done well, there were certain securities and improvements achieved. When you ignored the whole thing, you struggled along below the level of the intelligence of your own kind and came finally to oblivion. So the beginning of it all was the recognition that there were rules, and the old ones repeated this and instructed the young. They set up various forms of passing on information, and it was always the elder teaching the younger because there were no other sources of instruction. But this instruction included passing on the importance of watching nature, seeing how things operate around us, relating ourselves to the behavior patterns of other creatures, and finally refraining from those things which consistently proved harmful or hurtful. So little by little, a native kind of intelligence came up. We would call it today sheer ignorance, because in our terms of thinking, this primitive believing was little better than idolatry, little better than imagination. But even in those days, there seemed to be a rule governing imagination. If you imagined certain things, it was better. If you imagined certain other things, it was worse. And out of it all came the inevitable realization of better and worse, of good and evil, of security and insecurity, of emotion towards something better or a falling back into something worse. Nature never stood still. Having attained a certain degree of security, enough to build a hut or hollow out a cave on the side of a hill, the next thing that came after the problem of security that was most close to everyone was rebellion. We find the scriptures very clearly pointing this point out. The moment the individual attained a certain security, he wanted liberty. He wanted to do as he pleased. He wanted to be himself. He wanted to view the environment around him as something useful to himself. And as time went on, he began to be ambitious to dominate this environment. And out of this particular type of thinking came an impulse to freedom. This impulse to freedom now extends through practically every department of nature. Every creature that has discovered existence has attained a certain pattern of security, then wishes to achieve liberty, to be free from domination. Obviously, the first and common domination was the environment. The individual wanted to be free from the pressure of the necessity of doing certain things simply because they were there. He wanted to begin to think in terms of being a person. And the moment he began to feel like a person, he got into trouble. Because this is a very dangerous feeling. Still is. The individual, however, having decided he wanted to be free, began to use every faculty of his at his possession to achieve freedom. Out of it all, the determination to do what he pleased. Freedom wasn't very much in those times at best, but it was a rebellion against inevitables. It was an idea that the person could be stronger than the laws of his environment, and in fact could go so far ultimately as to create new laws of environment, and that these laws which he created were stronger than the laws of nature. This was another fundamental error. But it did rise inevitably in the thinking of human beings. So we got the survival person, and we have the individual who, in his survival, wishes to change his own destiny, wishes to do something of himself, wishes to possess something himself, wishes to train or dedicate some ability, but most of all, self-expression, to escape from a kind of bondage which was an imprisonment within the framework of natural law. So as long as man has existed, he has resisted in many ways the pressures of nature around him. He has wished to dominate everything, but as yet has never developed the faculties and powers capable of domination. So this brings us to the next step in the problem. Domination, which he wanted very definitely, was for a reason. He wanted to be better than somebody else. He wanted to be stronger than someone else. He wanted to be richer than someone else. So a whole group of patterns were created by which the individual could satisfy his own ambitions. Ambition arose by comparison with other things. There were creatures stronger than he was, creatures that lived longer, that were more fleet of foot. There were all kinds of things around him which he could not really compete with. But he also found the possibility of competing with the mutual abilities of his own kind. So he wanted to establish the Olympic Games or something by which he would create a competition based upon the idea of achieving greatness over something else. To have a stronger will, a stronger purpose. And the will became willful. And because of this willfulness fell the angels, according to Behme, the German mystic. Actually, therefore, we gradually get the person around to the point where he may be still in a wigwam or a cave or a mud hut, but he was now a person groping for progress, hunting and seeking ways of releasing himself from the entanglement of all other kinds of things. Now, in this time also we have rising up, however, a few mysterious people or mysterious beings which are sometimes referred to as the ancient priests. There were some that were born, apparently, with a certain difference of attitude, a certain tendency not to create a conflict with natural law, but to try to understand that law was better than man's way of doing things. The gradual discovery which ultimately produced the priest or the medicine man or the psychic leader of a tribe, these were recognitions, possibly by extra sensitivity of the individual, that there was something that if you didn't play the game right, you got into trouble. That therefore there should be some way of restoring the dignity of the rules, the laws of nature, the laws of the universe, The universe at that time probably was a small square of land inhabited by a few people and a lot of strange creatures. But in any event, it was life. It was the pattern of things. It was a place. It was our share of the good earth. So the one person who became more attentive to procedures began to realize that the more the individual achieved freedom, the greater his difficulties became. The moment he believed himself to be capable of going above the common rules of his kind, he was in trouble. So the more sensitive individual began to recognize that rules were the basis of security, that the individual who kept the rules was the one who survived. The one who went out on his own did not survive. Seton used to tell this story about the bison herds of the American Southwest. There were always some kinds of creatures, wolves, jackals, cats of various denominations and sides, that wandered along side by side with the buffalo herd or the bison herd. And they were watching for one thing, and that was a young rebel. They were watching for a bison who decided to go out on his own, who would leave the strength of the tribe or herd and go forth conquering and to conquer. As soon as this individual animal with a higher ego got a few yards away from the herd, down came the carnivores, and in a very short time he was finished. Now, the same thing happened on other levels. Seton pointed them out on animal and human levels. There are those who want to go out and do as they please regardless, who just won't take instruction or advice from anybody. They've got to do it themselves. So they wandered away from the herd and very soon get into serious difficulties, because strength was keeping the rules. Weakness was breaking the rules. And no man, no matter how much he considered his own strength, was strong enough to break the rules. So out of this realization gradually emerged the concept of somebody who made the rules, and theology came into existence. But as yet it was all very primitive and tribal, and each tribe had a pattern of its own. But gradually it became evident and obvious that all of these tribes found the same experiences. They were in different localities, their philosophies worked out differently, but all, by watching and observing, came to the final conclusion that the universal laws were immutable, that they could not be broken. Man cannot break the laws, but the laws can break man if he disobeys them. So out of this gradually came the development of herds of animals as domesticated creatures, the building of towns and villages, and all kinds of experiments in individuality, in which the individual tried in all kinds of ways to find out what he could do. And as he went along, he found that when he did certain things, he had certain rewards, but everything he founded also had certain penalties. The moment he went away from nature and nature's basic principles, he was in a confusion. All of his own ideas were useful and helpful, and he was proud of them. But a great many of them led to trouble. As, for example, the more the village grew in size, the less possible it was to stay in it. The village had to be left behind because of problems of sanitation had never been solved. And therefore, the village became a death trap, although it was the beginning of what we call civilization. And we're not quite certain now whether civilization is not an infirmity in itself. But regardless of all these things, our creature goes along. There was no schooling, as we know it, any more than there was school for rabbits and cats and dogs. But they all had their rules and they all had their laws, and they enjoyed what we might term today a natural ignorance. Now, a natural ignorance is not dangerous, really, because it is something we can get over. A natural ignorance afflicts everything that comes into this world. The babe that is born is not self-sufficient. Nothing that happens in our world is with a complete sense of certainty. there are always possibilities of alternate views. And most of all, there is the primordial lack of ultimate wisdom, which has afflicted man since the beginning of time. There are things we can know and the things we cannot know. And up to a certain point, everything we could know became natural, normal, and possible. And what we could not know became the source of eternal fears, doubts, wonders, and conflicts. There was no centralized opinion about things we could not personally sense with the limited faculties that we possessed. So we came out with an ignorant person. An ignorant person is one who is not schooled, but he's also one who may suffer now from ignorance, from the unwillingness to learn, or the unwillingness to accept ideas or beliefs that are contrary to his own willfulness. He will not accept the limitation upon his freedom without great resistance. And yet the freedom that he has perverted constantly since he first had it. His freedom can destroy him just as quickly as his bondage can. All the various patterns of life that he sets up are subject to certain rules and regulations which he has to finally accept. Somewhere in the dawn of time, the young sat around the old gentleman or the old squaw and listened to the stories of the people. They learned the ways of the jungle, of the forest, of the desert. They found out how to tell what foods were edible and what were poisonous. They found also how to create animal protections, to domesticate animals. They learned, unfortunately, also how to kill each other. But they were all parts of this early knowledge or early education. And this education divided sharply into two branches: the kind of education that helped us to do better and the kind of education that helped us to do worse. One was the means of advancing the divine plan, and the other was a means of opposing that plan by our own willfulness and determination to do as we please regardless of consequences. Out of this comes another little Bible story of the building of the Tower of Babel. Here people tried to build a tower that would go up to heaven, but they built it of mud and without straw. And as a result of it, it collapsed. And also, there was a division of tongues, and men no longer understood each other. So the building of a civilization was a long and difficult, arduous, and stress-laden procedure. But it was made worse not because of the actual seriousness of the situation, but rather of the unwillingness of living things to accept the basic truths of life. They would not accept equality. They accepted only that they, certain ones of them, would be better than others. They did not accept a general brotherhood. Some were brothers and some were enemies. And enemies were people who opposed the plans of those who did not like them. And in every case, all of these different decisions added up to a tremendous encyclopedia of basic facts. We gradually build up over the period of the first 50,000 years, probably, of man's inhabitants of this planet, a way of life, a code, a concept of existence. We finally came to certain basic conclusions about what could be and what could not be. And at a very early date, these conclusions were built into the subject of religion and theology. And it was assumed that the gods, the manados, or the great spirits, were responsible for these rules that men could not break. And that these various deities liked those who kept the rules and were a little unhappy about those who didn't keep the rules. And out of all this, the rules took on the idea of a moral tradition. They took on the pattern of the ancient wisdom, the wisdom that had been handed down from the past, the simple laws of common sense. So we may say that in the days of primordial ignorance, common sense gradually evolved as the panacea. There was nothing very scientific or very profound or very world-shaking about common sense, but it was a key to survival. It was a way of estimating the probabilities of things. It was a way also of approaching a problem from a point of experience, and that man could solve problems, and having solved them, could leave a written record of these solutions for the service of those who came after him. So we have experience, and we have common sense, and we have folk knowledge, and the basis of education. And then we know that the moment this occurred, humanity divided into two essential groups. Those who accepted this new concept of survival, who were glad and happy over being able to solve certain problems, and the other group who resented the whole idea from the very beginning because it interfered with doing exactly what they pleased. The freedom of will was hazarded. And this hazarding of freedom became a moral evil to those who were morally inadequate. So that we now have here the beginning of what we might call an assumed ignorance, a new kind of ignorance, an ignorance resulting from the dissemination of false knowledge. And this false knowledge came into existence for one reason and one reason only: individuals not willing to live according to the laws of nature. They had to do it differently. Therefore, the knowledge which they acquired in the development of their own egos became, we might say, a very complicated form of ignorance. All of that has descended now to our present time. We have schools, we have universities, we have all kinds of places where the individual can go to learn the essential values of a kind of living. In other words, he can find partial solutions, at least, to his determinations to be free, to do as he please, and to create a great and opulent future for himself, individually and theoretically, collectively. But the collective part seldom gets mixed up in the idea very deeply. Each person is out for himself. Now, having come to this idea of how to be successful, they began to teach it. And this process of being successful has been what might be termed practical or acceptable learning. That which did not improve the individual's temporal condition was not necessary to his success. Now, success was a very interesting thought. And most people today devote their lives very largely to the concept of success. They want to be successful. And if there are laws interfering with that, if they're man-made laws, they break them, and we call it crime. And if they are divinely made laws, they call it sin. But sins are not very important to the average person. Crimes are more difficult to get away with. So the problem of the individual breaking away from the pattern by motive of self-determinism left a very serious weakness in our systems of learning, in our definite determination to do what we want to do. Most of the world has forgotten what we were supposed to do. The idea that we came here from some remote source and went through hundreds of thousands of years to gradually develop a mind has been overlooked almost completely. It has been assumed that the mind was just given to us to do as we pleased with, that we could use it for the most unpleasant thinking, that we could use it to corrupt ourselves and others, and we could use it as an excuse or defense against the mistakes that we make. Now, by the time we have been thoroughly educated, we have what is called acquired ignorance. We have an ignorance which was not given to us by nature or by the gods or by any outside factor. We have acquired a schooling on how to do wrong and get away with it. Or, to say the maybe a little more genteelly, the way to live a life in this world with indifference to all the factors that are disagreeable to us. So this is ignorance of the factors that we do not want to accept. We do not want to believe basically in equality. We do not want to basically believe in the victory of right over wrong. We want to believe it theoretically and then do as we please. So we have an education that is now based not upon experience, not upon the wisdom of the elders, not upon the truths that were first carved on the cave walls of ancient France and Spain. What we are now trying to do is to create a new kind of world, a world to be fashioned to do exactly as we please. Perfect freedom, the ability to invent as long as an invention is even possible, the possibility of becoming rich as possible, and then holding on to it, which is not so easy. Everywhere we want to be exactly what we want to be. If we want to drink ourselves to death, it is an inalienable right that we can do so. If we want to be kind, it's very nice. But if it's expensive, we generally get over this type of feeling. So actually, we have created a new kind of world. It is a world in which we have created a kind of ignorance which will help us to survive the mistakes that we make. We do not want to do it right primarily. We want to do it sufficiently so that it will serve us, but not that we will serve it with any true integrity. So we have today to find what might be termed basics, and they're not easy to find. They're not easy because we do not believe in them any longer. We believe in certain specialized attributes. Way back in the dawn of things, when there was an argument, somebody threw a stone. And that gradually developed into a slingshot. Then we put a handle on one side of the stone and made a tomahawk or a battle club out of it. Then we developed the bow and arrow. And then after a while, the throwing spear, which was the primitive weapon of the Western Hemisphere. We went on a little further, and somebody found out that the Chinese fired off firecrackers for weddings and funerals. So we took the idea and made a cannon in order that we might shoot each other. After that got a little longer, and then everybody had a little bigger cannon. Then something else had to be accomplished in order that we should always be victorious over the adversary. And, of course, the adversary was always part of ourselves. So we gradually broke up humanity into a mass of conflicting units, each struggling desperately to survive according to rules that were essentially wrong. Therefore, the education should have come along at this time and begun to correct these errors. But what education did, instead of explaining to us why we shouldn't build bigger cannons, education now tells us to make nuclear bombs instead. And that becomes a symbol of the higher learning of our materialistically oriented culture. We always get over a bad situation by creating a worse one that will eat it up. And then we will suffer because the thing will turn on us. So all the way along, the problem of ignorance has never essentially changed and cannot change until the individual determines within himself the difference between ignorance and wisdom. The evidences, the monuments to ignorance are so numerous that even the school child today is beginning to feel this this process. So he is now striking for freedom, and freedom is taking him back to the first days of emergence from caves. Today we want to show that we do not respect the mistakes of our elders by creating an antisocial situation. Instead of, however, of trying to turn against our elders, we would get much further if we would look more deeply into the basics of life. It is not our ancestor who is responsible primarily. It is always an attitude, a conviction, and a belief that is unsound. That gets us all into these difficulties. Grandfather may have had it, great-grandfather may have had it, but the fact that he had it and that we don't like what he had, so we create a revolution against grandfather, is ridiculous. The revolution is turned against a person, but the very ones who are revolting are in their own turn, in a little different way, doing the same thing we reject in their ancestry. It just keeps on repeating itself. So the problem of the need for a clearing up of ignorance has to be given some kind of thought sometime, or gradually humanity will return to the caves from which it came, because it cannot stand the constant battle between personal willfulness and universal truth. The two are incompatible unless the individual rises above himself. These basic laws will never come down to his level. He has to go up to theirs or he is in trouble. And to go up to theirs, the higher levels of things will result or require self-control, discipline, idealism, integrity, a fraternal relationship with life, revolutions of a peaceful nature in which we find joy in growing, whereas revolutions of a militant nature lead to nothing but distress. So we are looking around now to see where we are beginning to work on the problem of getting real education, to come into the possession of an acquired knowledge that will serve us. We have as the basis of an acquired knowledge an internal life around a mysterious power, principle, or energy which we call soul. There's something inside of ourselves, a small voice that gets smaller as the days go by, but is still there. There is an internal realization that we're wrong. But we haven't the courage or the strength or the integrity to give that realization an opportunity to express itself. We are convinced that in our present state, the first move toward living better is going to strip us of everything we have. We are going to be outlaws if we become intelligent. The reward is not to be intelligent, but to become part of a pattern. The rebel, the teacher, the idealist, the dreamer, these are outcasts, rejected by a society that wants none of them. There are certain things we have not been able to reject because of the tremendous intensity and universality of them, such as, for instance, religion. But we still are able to live in the presence of it without being greatly influenced. And most people, regardless of their religious affiliations, are seeking primarily for fame and fortune. These are the things that come first. Now, if we're going to try to do something to change this basic ignorance, then we must say or believe that this basic ignorance is in a sense, moral. It is kindly. It is rather simple. It's just, I don't know, but I'd like to find out attitude. And any individual who wants to grow must grow by gradually becoming aware of things he needs to know and providing with this knowledge a sense of his own acceptance. If he wants to live better, he can. It will please his inner life, but not be particularly fortunate in his economic environment. Therefore, all the way along, the individual has to stand for principles, or he must become involved in the compromises which we now call civilization. We are now standing at a point where it is obvious that we're in serious trouble. We also realize from daily reading of the rather pessimistic press that this trouble is not getting any better to speak of, that we are still trying to make things work that never have worked since the beginning of time. We have tried to fight our way to peace. We did that with stone axes. We did it with bows and arrows. We did it by just throwing logs at each other. It never ended. The possibility of fighting our way to peace is not acceptable to universal law. But the universal law has its own way of solving these things. And these, the way that nature solves this type of problem is very simple. It is in the very principle of gradually achieving basics out of natural ignorance. The answer to animosities is simply friendship. The answer to over-ambitions is moderation. The answer to militant aggressiveness is a non-aggressive, non-militant effort to restore the integrities of human relationships. But nobody's much interested in them. No one wants to see that everyone is fairly treated, because to do this would create what to young and ambitious persons is a universal monotony that they cannot even think of enduring. The adventure of killing themselves is very close to their minds and hearts. The possible winning of the great lottery of life, the possibility of becoming an alcoholic and still retain the love and friendship of mankind and keep your job. These are the things that are concerning most people, is ways to do what they please and not suffer from the result. And wherever this is taught, this is acquired ignorance. It is simply taking something that isn't so, glorifying it, putting a few letters after its name, and considering it intelligent. We cannot solve these problems simply by aggrandizing of the trouble itself. We cannot point to how noble the difficulty is, when in reality the nobility lies in the worlds of solution. Now, how are we going to get a better grip on education? If you send a small child to school, we know that child doesn't know too much at that time, but it doesn't need to know very much, because it is under the strong protection of parents. Now, if these parents don't know anything, that's a little difficult for the child as well as the parents. It's not recommended. But if it is true, then the opportunity for the parent to grow a little is intensified by the needs of the child. And the thoughtful parent sometimes does thinking for the first time when confronted with a small child who needs to know, and the parent hasn't the slightest idea what to tell him. Now, this fact that nobody knows what to do about anything is not the keynote of a great advanced civilization. It is actually only evidence of something that has missed the mark for a great deal and must either go back and start over, or nature will step in. Now, nature is not cruel, but nature has certain moral factors in it. It isn't moral in the sense that it stands somewhere and preaches sermons. Nature, however, does reward that which is right by certain securities and integrities, and it punishes those that are not right by certain difficulties. And because most people aren't right, the difficulties are numerous. All right, you piled up a universe of difficulties, vast structures like mountains piled upon mountains, and the difficulties are being strengthened and intensified every day. You pile up something like that, and then you turn to the people and say, we will show you how to solve this. But they can't. The mountain will not disappear. The solution does not lie in trying to make the mountain endurable. Nor can you take that mountain and mine it for gold ore or anything of that kind. All you get out of it is trouble. So as the problems grow greater and more people are out of work, more and more people are doubting everything, then the question arises what to do about it. And the answer to the informed person, to the naturally ignorant individual who wants to know more, is to find out exactly what the problem is and cure it. The intellectual, instead of the intelligible approach to this situation, is to take the mountain, climb it, measure it, and decide that it can be built still higher. As we do this, we point to the mountain as a great natural disaster, as a great natural hazard, when it is nothing of the call of that kind. It's our own building. The difficulties that we face are not put there by outrageous providence. They are put there by the simple mistakes of people who either cannot or will not grow. If they cannot grow, they have simple ignorance. If they can grow and don't, they have compound ignorance. And most people suffer from one or the other. But there is in each individual the inalienable right to do that which should be done. There is no possibility of taking away from the person the potential of being an intelligible, reasonable individual. There is no solution to our economic problems, our employment problems, our population problems, unless we get to understand and live in harmony with natural law.